yard.
Great.
Well, got a little cold in Houston. A lot of draft.
Senator,
I was next to the cold air vent.
Senator Mondale has attacked your credentials since you're traveling through the Farm Belt, and he says that you were one of the sponsors of the Nixon government reorganization bill that would have destroyed the Department of Agriculture. Do you have any response to that?
Oh, in fact, I co-sponsored that after I was assured that that wouldn't happen. I'm well aware of that. I'm worried now about the Carter reorganization plans and what Bobby Smith has said, which would indicate we're about to lose our, or have it combined with something else, our Department of Agriculture.
Well, Mondale charges, though, that regardless of the assurances, that it would have happened under the provisions that were written into the bill. How would it, how were you assured that it would not
happen? Well, I had assurances from President Nixon that it wouldn't happen. In fact, I said earlier today, in some public statement, mentioned that very thing, that I'd been through this, and I knew the fact that we had received in the Nixon administration, and I said at the time I'd withheld my support of that measure until I had that assurance. But it didn't happen, and we want to make certain it doesn't happen, and the best way to make certain it doesn't happen is to vote for President Ford.
Senator, President Ford was in Iowa this past week and said there'd be no more embargoes on grain exports. I believe you mentioned this in your debate, but indicated there might be some exceptions. What would those exceptions be?
Well, the only exception I know of is some extreme emergency. I don't foresee that happening, but we could have a crop disaster nationwide, for example, where you'd have to have make certain you took care of your domestic needs. And of course, if that happened, the price would be so high the farmer could survive. But you know, we've got our domestic commitments that we have to have a priority.
Senator, consumers are still paying a relatively high price for meat. Our cattle producers and hog producers are going broke. And would your administration look into that disparity in prices?
We've already looked into it. There have been more studies on disparities in this area, and Wiley Mayne knows probably better than I this number of studies when he was in the House. It always seems that when the price of meat drops, it never goes down in the supermarket. But when the price of beef goes up, it goes up the next day in the supermarket. And I think even the FTC looked into that. I'll have to check with my wife.
What could you do to help the cattle producers who are literally going broke?
Well, one thing we've done, the president's done, is to take care of the beef import problem. And it's going to take a while. You know, we've got we have a surplus of beef, and it's going to work through that cycle. We're going to meet tomorrow morning. Hopefully, I'll pick up some suggestions. But I will have an important role to play in agriculture under the Ford administration. And I've been on the committee 8 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate. My counterpart, Senator Mondale, dropped off the Ag Committee after a few years, saying it wasn't too interesting. Went over to the Labor Committee, where he's found a great deal of interest. We're also encouraged by the NBC poll. It now says it's 42 to 40. So we're only 2 points.
You sort of blame the Democrats for World War II and Vietnam War today.
Oh, not much.
Not
much.
Well,
sorry about that. I think, I know what I did.
What would you have done if you were president?
I'll have to think back. Right, I was in the Kappa Sig House in Lawrence, Kansas. We took the day off. But we weren't very well prepared in that for that conflict, and we have Governor Carter now talking about defense cuts. I just want to stay prepared, and I want to reiterate, if they're trying to hang Watergate and the pardon around the necks of the Republican Party, then they better be prepared to defend some other acts in the past, including World War II and Vietnam.
Do you think if the United States did prepare, do you think if we had been prepared on December 7, 1941, the Japanese would not have attacked in the situation?
Oh, I don't know. I think probably it would have been. It's always nice to be prepared. I think back to the Potsdam and Yalta agreements and the secret agreements made by President Roosevelt. So we want to get into, you know, secret agreements and politics and wars, and I think it's best we talk about the future, but I can't seem to encourage my Democrat counterpart or his running mate to talk about anything but Watergate.
Aren't you doing what you accuse them of doing, though?
Last question.
Aren't you just doing what you're accusing them of doing?
No, I just want to focus on the disparity in the efforts we've made. We raised this last week. It upset Senator Mondale, but he thinks we're supposed to accept everything he says and not be concerned about it. So we intend to fight fire with fire.
What effect will the forced resignation of Earl Butts have on the Republican vote here in the Farm Belt?
I don't think it'll have any great impact. Secretary stated his reasons for his resignation. The president's made some very positive steps since that resignation in the Farm Belt, raising the loan levels of beef import, imposing beef import quotas. We're going to win in the Farm Belt. I think farmers begin to understand the great preponderance of influence, the overwhelming influence organized labor leaders have in the Carter administration or would have. And that frightens America's farmers, and it should. Thank you, Senator.
Dole and our candidate for Congress, Joanne Soper. Hello, it's great to be here, and I'm sorry I missed my introduction. But I have a very, very happy opportunity right now to introduce someone to you of whom I'm very proud and have had an opportunity to visit with coming in from the airport. He is a war hero. I'm sure you do know that. And Senator Bob Dole does bring a very distinctive record of achievement to the 1976 Republican ticket. He left college in 1943 to enlist in the U.S. Army. He served with the elite 10th Mountain Division in Italy, was twice wounded and twice decorated for valor, the second time while helping one of his comrades to safety. Senator Dole served for 8 years in the House of Representatives before he won a resounding victory to serve in the U.S. Senate, where he has also served for 8 very important years. He is a ranking Republican on the Senate Agriculture Committee and also serves as a member of the Senate Finance and Budget Committee. He is also a member of the Select Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs. And many of us realized as we watched the Republican convention another aspect of Robert Dole's interest and career, as we learned that he is particularly sensitive to the needs of handicapped Americans, serves on the National Board of Sponsors of the American Medical Center in Denver, the Board of Rehabilitation USA, and Honorary Chairman of the National Society of Autistic Children. It is with a great deal of pleasure and pride that I present to you, my friends here in Sioux City and in this area, the next Vice President of the United States, Senator Bob Dole.
Thank you. Just have a note here. There's a donation box outside. Oh, you've already heard this? Yeah. Well, put that announcement away. Oh, I'm really pleased to be here, and I know where I am. I know where I've been. I just sort of feel that the crowds are more enthusiastic since our debate on Friday night, and I appreciate that very much. Well, I said at that time that my counterpart was my friend, and he's still my friend, and that's Senator Mondale. And I could never get him to say anything nice about me, and I complimented him 3 or 4 times. There's something about Democrats. They just don't want to ever suggest that Republicans can do anything. But as I said, I'll be happy to visit with him in the Senate after the after next year. And one of us is going to be there. So I've got a good button on. I think Joanne's going to be your next congressperson from this district. For that, we're very thankful. We just made a deal upstairs. I told her I'd be happy to help her if she would call a friend of hers in Hutchinson, Kansas, and see if he would help us. So,
is that right?
We're going to do that. He's the editor of the paper there. So, they used to work together in Burlington, so we're making progress. Well, I had a chance to visit my good friend Wiley Main coming in, and after that visit, ran into another colleague of mine, former colleague Ralph Bierman, who doesn't live in your state but lives very near your state. And so Ralph is here from Nebraska, and at one time Ralph and I were seatmates on the House Agriculture Committee, and we thought we did a great deal for the farmer at that time. And then Wiley Main and I became very close friends on that committee on the House side, and we think we had an impact. And then I went to the Senate. When I left the House to go to the Senate, some of my colleagues told me that I'd improved the intelligence levels of both bodies by making that move. And I didn't catch on for a while, but after... I remember my first 6 months in the Senate, I wondered how I got there, and from then on, I wondered how the rest of them got there. So that's sort of the way it goes. But I wanted to emphasize, first of all, that I have a background in agriculture. I'm not a farmer, but I come from a small town in the central part of Kansas, Russell, Kansas, and worked with my father there, who had a cream and egg station when I was growing up, and so we sort of grew up with farmers, and I've served 16 years in the Congress on the House and Senate Ag Committees. President Ford has indicated that come January, I'm going to have a very vital role to play in agriculture in the next administration. And I mean that, and he means that. It's not window dressing or pre-election rhetoric. It's a fact, and I would assume that my primary efforts would be in the field of exports to sort of put emphasis and underscore the need for exports for a strong farm economy. And so I suggest that at least you take a look at our background. I'm flatly against grain reserves, government-owned grain reserves, because I've seen Orville Freeman, who was Secretary of Agriculture, find more out-of-condition corn when the price went up when he was Secretary to dump on the market to drive the price of corn down. And he used to say this would stabilize prices. Well, in my state, stabilized prices are low prices, and we don't want any low prices for America's farmers. We've got... I don't want to talk about Carter. This is Sunday, and but I will. Well, seriously, I said in Waterloo that Carter got his start in Iowa, and this ought to be where he gets his finish. So, and I'm serious about that because we're going to win this election in states like Iowa and Kansas and Oklahoma and the Dakotas and Nebraska. And this is where we should win this election. It's where Republicans should be strong in farm areas. And frankly, it's in the areas that right now there's some degree of softness. But we're going to win because the American farmer is going to understand, first of all, that we have a pretty good program. It needs some updating. It ought to be modernized a little bit, but we have a pretty good farm program. And secondly, the American farmer understands who's going to influence the Carter administration if he were elected. And I tried to point up in my debate in a casual way on Friday night the influence that organized labor would have. I'm not suggesting George Meany would be the Secretary of Agriculture, but he would have great influence in farm matters. Somebody asked Meany one time why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? So he's got a pretty good lock on that party now. And I understand farmers' reaction to embargoes, and I was against embargoes at the time. I said so. I can't really recall any of these Democrats now coming out of the woodwork who said much about embargoes because they knew where the real problem was. They knew where the pressure was coming from. It was coming from the Longshoremen's Union and George Meany. And President Ford didn't really have that many options. The question whether or not the unions were ever going to load the ships. And the big question whether or not we're going to increase that export subsidy for American shipping. And so the president had the embargo. I disagreed with it at the time, said so publicly. The record's there. And I think when he was in Iowa on Friday, he made it very clear that we've learned our lesson. We listened one time to George Meany, but if you are saddled with the Carter administration, you're going to have Meany and Carter talking almost on a daily basis. And so I just say that to the American farmer, we want a free agriculture. We want an unfettered agriculture. We're finally getting government off your backs, and let's don't turn it around and reverse the progress we've made the last 8 years. I'm trying to get over a cold. Let's generally drink pineapple juice, but it's a lot better for you than peanut butter. And for one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. But somebody told me last night that the peanut was the easiest nut to crack there is. And so I thought about that. We'll see what we can come up with. But I want to say just a couple of things. Now, one thing that President Ford is going to need the next 4 years is more Republicans in the Congress. And that's why I'm here, and that's why you're here. And we want to elect Joanne Soper to Congress, and we're going to do that with your help. And just let me give you a few reasons why. You know, I've mentioned labor leaders from time to time, not working men and women, because they're going to be on our side, many, many of them, because they're against big spending, they're against big government. They're against gun control. They're against more federal interference. They're against amendments offered by my counterpart, Senator Mondale, to add $9 billion to spending program. That's just one amendment to add $9 billion to the budget. They have children to educate. They're concerned. But right now, organized labor virtually controls the Congress of the United States. And I don't suggest they shouldn't have influence. They should have a great deal of influence. But they shouldn't dominate the Congress, and farmers shouldn't dominate the Congress, and businessmen shouldn't dominate the Congress. There ought to be some balance in the Congress. We don't have that balance in the Congress. And let's change that to some degree, and let's send some Republicans who have a balanced understanding of the needs of all the segments of our society. And let's improve that ratio in the Congress. I'm not suggesting we're going to control the Congress. We're probably not. But we can improve it. When I served, first started in the House, I think, you had 7 districts in Iowa, I think, and it was 6-1 Republican. Now you have 6, and it's 5-1 Democrat. I just left Chuck Grassley. He doesn't have anybody to talk to in the Congress. He's a lone ranger now from the state of Iowa. He liked to have some company. So I said, well, we'll see what we can do. But in any event, I want to make that point. I want to make another point. The Republican Party isn't a backward party. We're not against the American people. We're not against those who need health care. We're not against Social Security benefits. We're not against farm programs. We have disaster programs for farmers. We don't lack compassion. And I resent some of the implications raised by the other party that the Republican Party really doesn't care. We really do care. We have so much concern for the American people that we're forced, and President Ford has been forced to veto some 62 bills this year. Many sounded good, some were good, but they all cost money. They would have cost the American taxpayer $9 to $10 to $11 billion. And so he had the courage, and he had the fortitude to veto those bills, not because he likes to veto legislation, because he was concerned about inflation. He was concerned about the American working man, the American working woman, and even more so those on fixed incomes, our senior citizens who have some fixed income, because inflation just robs you of purchasing power just as much as any tax would rob you of purchasing power. And so when you hear someone on the other side talk about why isn't President Ford for this and why isn't President Ford for that, when you hear Senator Mondale or Governor Carter talking about tax reform and new spending programs, just ask them one question. And particularly if you're 25 to 40, I would guess, and paying Social Security and wondering where it's going to end, and paying more taxes, wondering where it's going to end, ask them how they're going to pay for it. Are they going to raise your taxes, or are you going to have more inflation? In either case, you're going to pay through the nose. And so I think we really ought to get serious about this election. We only have 2 weeks to go. Iowa is a key state. Iowa is an important state. We want the 8 electoral votes in this state. And I understand we're now ahead in the polls by a very slim margin, but we're ahead, and that's progress. And we can win if you help us in the next 2 weeks. My first assignment after receiving the nomination was to go to Seattle, Washington. Governor Carter was addressing the Legion Convention there, and he said many things. Among others, he said that he was against blanket amnesty, but he was for blanket pardon. Well, Legionnaires are against amnesty, and so I looked up amnesty in the dictionary and said amnesty means blanket pardon. So I was new, and I didn't really realize how fuzzy Carter really was. So I was on the program the next day, and I announced the position that we're going to pose, not just for opposition's sake, but the position of this administration, the Ford Dole administration, will be opposition to blanket pardon or blanket amnesty or blanket clemency, and let me tell you why. You know, President Ford had a case-by-case program, and it worked. That may be the end result when it's all said and done. But I've got another priority, and I think we ought to sort of get our priorities straight. There's still hundreds of missing in Southeast Asia. Some may be prisoners of war. Some may be alive. And I just got to believe that if we have any priorities in this country, we've got to concern ourselves with those forgotten Americans in Southeast Asia. Before we worry too much about those who forgot America at a time of need, and I just happen to believe that that's another area we ought to take a hard look at. Now, I don't have any personal quarrel with Governor Carter. I've been trying to find out what his positions are on the issues. I don't think I'll ever find out. I don't think you're ever going to find out. He doesn't want us to know. He doesn't want us to know. He started his campaign in Iowa, and you have different views on abortion, but he had one view on abortion, and after he got the nomination, he had another view on abortion. Now, whether you're for or against really isn't material right now. The point is that he made a flip-flop. He made it right in this state, and that's where he started his series of flip-flops, and he hasn't stopped. It wasn't too long ago, he said, and I had his quote here. Now he's trying to deny he said it. Every day he says he didn't say something. This is what he said in the September-October 76 issue of Liberty Magazine. It's a Seventh-day Adventist magazine. He said, I quote, I would favor the taxation of church properties other than the church building itself. That's what he said. I didn't say that. Now, is he going to tax church hospitals and orphanages, rest homes, schools? I don't know what he means. He now says he doesn't mean this. And he fired off a telegram yesterday to President Ford. He said, President Ford, quit misrepresenting my position. I thought he should have sent three telegrams because he has about three positions on everything. I just think the good people of Iowa are very sophisticated voters. There are going to be a great many Democrats and a great many independents in this state and a great many Republicans who are going to ask themselves a one hard question. Which candidate offers the best hope for leadership? And I've known President Ford for 16 years. Wiley Main's known President Ford. Many of you in this room, John McDonald, Margaret, they know President Ford and have for a long time. And you can say all you want about President Ford, but he's still that same decent, accessible, honest, open person. And his integrity and honesty are unquestioned except by Jimmy Carter. Nobody else questioned his honesty, but Carter's still out there trying to infer that somehow President Ford has something to hide. He was cleared by the special prosecutor, but he was smeared in the process by all the politicians on that side who just can't believe that President Ford is above and beyond reproach, and he is, and we know he is, and that means a lot to a lot of Americans. And he's offered that leadership. And he's offered that leadership, and he continues to offer that leadership. And they run around this country dragging Watergate back and forth and the Nixon pardon back and forth. And I said in our debate the other night, we want to go back into history. We can talk about a lot of things. How many men have died in wars when the Democrats were in control? How many are wounded when the Democrats were in control? Now, I'm not suggesting that Governor Carter, if he were elected, would lead us into some charge. I am suggesting he wants to weaken our defense posture in the world. And I just happen to believe that we need a strong national defense for one reason. That one reason is for peace. And I tried to direct some of my comments the other night at young Americans and mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers who are concerned about war and peace. And you can cut it any way you want. And you can knock it around, you can kick it around, you can look at the record. But one thing you have to say about this administration, we're at peace. No one is being fired at. No one is being hospitalized. Not many in this audience. I don't see a single Army uniform in this audience. No one is waiting to run off to some foreign country to fight a war. And that's largely because of the leadership of President Ford and because we're strong and because we're respected. And that's what it's all about. And see, when you make that choice on November 2nd, keep that in mind. And keep in mind that President Ford has been for a strong defense all during his tenure as a congressman, as vice president, and as president. And keep in mind, we're respected in this world by everyone, by friend and foe alike. They respect us because we're strong. They respect us because President Ford has the experience. And I just say to this audience that we need your help. We appreciate what you've done for all of us. And we can only promise that we'll do our best for all of you and that we have faith in the people. Faith in the people of Iowa. Faith in the people in this congressional district, and we only ask you to have faith in us. Thank you very much.